The Friars Club is a private club for people in show business. Among its more celebrated former members are Irving Berlin, George M. Cohan, Will Rogers, George Burns, Groucho Marx, and Frank Sinatra. The Friars Club is famous for its testimonial roasts. A documentary about the club called Let Me In, I Hear Laughter has just been released on video. Last year, when the film was broadcast on Cinemax, I spoke with two of the comics featured in it. Freddie Roman is the dean of the New York Friars. For much of his career, he played the clubs in the Borscht Belt, the resort hotels of the Catskill Mountains in New York. He was one of the stars of the Broadway show Catskills on Broadway. Jeffrey Ross is one of the younger members of the Friars Club. He's become famous within the club for his hilarious insults at the testimonial roasts. He's performed in clubs around the country, on The Letterman Show and on Comedy Central. Let's talk about the roast, which is one of the things the Friars Club is most famous for. Freddie Roman, you've actually been roasted.
I sure was.
Jeff, were you at Freddie Roman's roast?
You know, I unfortunately, I think I was shooting a part in something, but
I was so disappointed he wasn't there, but...
It's the only one I missed in a long time, but I heard all the jokes.
We had a wonderful, wonderful roast. The roast master or roast mistress at my roast was Joy Behar, who currently stars on The View with Barbara Walters every morning. And she was absolutely brilliant doing it. She did a great job.
I wrote some good jokes about you that I didn't get to do, Freddie.
Yeah, do them now.
I was going to say, Freddie Roman's been doing comedy so long, his punchlines are in Latin. This is a guy who did the Ed Sullivan Show pilot.
I wish I was there. Yeah, you.
So Freddie Roman, what does it feel like to be sitting on the dais, everybody staring at you, as all of your showbiz friends are, you know, saying very funny, kind of insulting things about you?
You know, having been on the other side of it, I had done approximately 20 roasts myself, and having been on that side of it, and then to sit there, you sort of know what to expect, but yet when it hits you... And you sit there laughing because it is funny, and yet you're saying to yourself, geez, I hope he didn't mean that.
Right.
But no, in all, it was a great evening for me. It was a love fest. They did roast me, but they roasted me with a great feeling, and it was fun. I loved every second of it.
Jeff Ross, what are some of the roasts you've participated in?
I have done, my first one was Steven Seagal. With Milton Berle as the roast master.
Oh, wow, what a combo.
And let me just interject before Jeff goes on, only with this one story.
Uh-huh.
Milton Berle, who really was the king of the roast for 100 years, he's the best roast master there ever was. But he also had little habits, like he didn't like anyone else to be funnier than him. And so when Jeffrey got up, Milton interrupted him in the middle, which usually for a young comedian who's nervous enough about doing his own things could destroy the young comedian and get him flustered and all loused up. Well, Jeff Ross handled it like he had been doing it for 30 years. He put Milton in his place so beautifully that Milton just sat down and shut up, and that's the first time I ever saw Burl end up that way.
That's in the documentary, that whole...
Is it?
Buddy Hackett and I tell that story intercut.
Mm-hmm.
Milton kept poking me in the ribs, which only I knew, you know, nobody can see that.
We couldn't see it.
No, but it's driving me nuts. You know, this guy is poking me in the ribs from right next to me. And finally, I just laid into him. I said, something about how old. I said, Milton, you know, Milton's Burl's been doing comedy so long, he lost to Mark Twain on Star Search.
Then you said something about him with an antique shop or something.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I forgot about that. I said, Uncle Milton, we've actually met before. I saw you once downtown in an antique shop. $800.
Which got one of the big screams of the entire afternoon.
So Buddy Hackett stood up off mic in that voice, and he said, hey, Milton, let the kid work. Remember when you used to? And then, the place just exploded, and... It's great. Buddy tells the story in the documentary in just such a funny way. When I was improvising with Buddy Hackett and Milton Berle in front of 1,300 people, I mean, I knew I was suddenly in the World Series of Comedy there, and holding my own. It was great.
And you won the MVP award that day, too.
Rookie of the Year. I roasted Danny Aiello. I've roasted Kelsey Grammer. I've roasted Mickey Rooney, Hugh Hefner, Jerry Springer, Drew Carey, and probably a couple others. Danny Aiello was great because... he always comes to the roast. And he sat next to me at the Jerry Stiller roast. And it really helps me. You know, he's a great laugher. He cries. He wipes his eyes. He slams the table. And I told him that it just wouldn't be the same doing a roast unless he was there. He's just great. He cried at the end of his roast.
Was he?
He was overcome with the emotion of it, that we saw fit to put him down as a roastie in the same breath with some of the greatest stars in all of show business.
You know what I was thinking about this lately? These are great comedians who are sitting down in their houses writing jokes about you. You can get Milton Berle or, like Jason Alexander to write about Jerry Stiller, to sit and think about this, to work and use their comedic minds to roast somebody. That's a great honor. And I think Danny, his background, you know, he was a doorman at the Improv when he was a young man starting out in show business. Danny Aiello understands how the art of comedy. And I think he was really moved by the effort that people made.
So what are some of the things you had to say about Danny Aiello?
What can you really say about Danny Aiello that hasn't already been said by some guy in the witness protection program with nine fingers? I made like somebody pass me a note halfway through the roast, and I said, all kidding aside, Danny Aiello is my favorite actor or else.
Now, Freddie Roman, you've spent years working the hotels and country clubs in the Catskill Mountains, and then you appeared on Broadway, in Catskills on Broadway. And
that was my baby, my crowning achievement, right?
So what are some of the ways you saw the Catskills change in the years that you performed there?
Well, when I started up there, there were over 200 places to work in, and so the smaller places took chances on new comedians because they didn't have budgets to book the big names. And it was a wonderful place to work out your craft because I would do 6, 7, 8 shows a week. And yes, I was getting $25 or $30 a show, but still it was $200 a week in those days. I could pay my rent, support my two children. And then every year it got a little bigger and a little better. And eventually I was making a wonderful living up there. And then what happened is the advent of the jet plane. Suddenly, people could be in Florida in 2 hours, Puerto Rico in 3 hours, Las Vegas in 4 hours, and people started to go other places other than the heavily predominant Jewish crowd that used to come to the Catskills because it was an hour and a half away from New York by car. They suddenly found out they could fly to the Caribbean, they could fly anywhere they want, and the hotels started to suffer a little bit in that respect, so the amount of hotels declined quite quickly. And until there was only the 7 or 8 big ones left. And that's what really happened. That was the rise and fall of the Catskills.
Jeff Ross, did you ever either play the Catskills or vacation in the Catskills?
Both.
Did you?
Yeah, sure. My parents took me up to Grossingers when I was a kid. I remember seeing a comedian. I don't know who it was. Freddie, maybe you can help me. I remember the one joke. The guy was wearing a tuxedo and he did a song. He sang a parody of, like, the Helen Reddy song. He said, I am woman, as you know, because I sit down when I go.
Malzie Lawrence.
That was Malzie?
That was in Mal's act, yeah. Malzie Lawrence was one of my co-stars in Catskills on Broadway.
Right.
For years, I thought that's what a comedian was a guy in a tuxedo in the Catskills.
For years, that's what it was. That was it, yeah. You had to wear a tuxedo.
And I've since done them. You know, I kind of did my research. It's like paying your dues. I played a lot of the hotels. I remember opening for Jon Stewart on Singles Weekend. At the Concord. And, yeah. You know, 30 people walked out on me, and they told me I was a big hit. That's a tough crowd.
One of the great things about—
And then Jon Stewart didn't bring a sport jacket. We didn't know. And he felt so self-conscious. When I walked off stage, the band was playing him on. I took my jacket off, and he put it on and walked out with the same jacket
on. That's funny. One of the great things about the Concord Hotel, which was the largest resort in the Catskills, their nightclub sat 3,500 people. And one of the great things was those people, if they didn't care for you, they walked out. They just didn't sit there. So there were 8 doors leaving the Concord nightclub. And the next day you would always ask the maitre d', how was the show? And he'd say, 6 doors. 6 doors meant 3/4 of the audience left. But then every once in a while he would say, nobody left. And those were the tribute nights. My first time ever there on a Saturday night, I was opening for Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet, and I did a stroke of genius because they wanted to start the show while only half the people were in the nightclub. And if you're the opening act, it's murder with hundreds of people walking in. Nobody can pay attention to you. So I ripped the button off my tuxedo, and I had them get somebody from wardrobe to come and have to sew it on. And I killed an additional 12 minutes, so everybody was seated when I went on. And I killed the audience, and it made me a huge hit up there for the rest of my life. So that little trick actually worked for me.
Hmm.
I know Henny Youngman was a longtime member of the Friars Club and hung out there a lot. What did the Friars Club do when he passed not that long ago?
Well, we naturally, all of us were at the funeral. It was a huge turnout for his funeral. And we then did a memorial service for him at the club where his family was there, and all the comics got up and told anecdotes about Henny. And he was one of the great. I mean, he sat at the front table to the dining room. He died at 91 or 92. And every day people would walk by, "Henny, how are you?" And if someone had guests that weren't members of the Friars, it didn't matter. He would tell them, anyone had stopped at his table, he would tell them three jokes. Hmm. He had little gimmicks he had that he would give them. He was an adorable man. Now, he did about 25 of our roasts and is in the history books as the only comedian in show business at a roast that never said one word about the guest of honor. They would introduce him, Henny Youngman, king of the one-liners, because he can't remember two. Here he is, Henny Youngman. And Henny Youngman would come out and he'd look at the guest of honor and he'd say, "So I went to the doctor and I said, 'Doctor, I can't hold my water. What should I do?' And the doctor said, 'Get off my carpet.'" And he would do one joke after another. And finally, after 20 rapid-fire jokes about doctors, psychiatrists, he would turn to Milton Berle and say, "I could talk about Milton Berle all day." Well, he never said a word about it. And he would sit down, and the people loved it, and they knew that's what he was going to do.
It occurred to me that Henny is in his 90s now. He walks into the club and gets the respect as if he opened at the Copa the night before. People clap when they see him. And I said, this is really what being a Friar must mean. I mean, you know, I'm a young guy. I'm in my 30s now. And, you know, comedy clubs come and go and club owners come and go. And we travel and I live by myself. It can be a very lonely job. And Henny must have lived through all the things that I'm living through 100 times. And that's, he goes there, and it's like Cheers. Everybody knows his name. He walks into place, and he's embraced. He's still a star in his 90s. And
George Burns, who was active until he was 98. It was only the last year and a half before he hit 100 that they didn't really work. But George Burns would come to the club, and 40 people would be around the table just listening to his anecdotes about vaudeville. I'll never forget, George Burns was 94, and they booked him at the Concord Hotel. And 3,500 people gave him a standing ovation. And the next day I was there, and I had lunch with him. And we were sitting at the lunch table, and an elderly man, about 80, walked over to him in a tennis outfit. And he said, "George, I'm 80, George, and I play 2 sets of tennis every day." And Burns looked up at him and said, "When I was 80, I had the clap." I mean, and those are wonderful, treasured memories that you hang around the club that you hear all the time. I mean, to this day, Alan King comes to the bar at 5 o'clock and holds court and does these wonderful show business stories about his wonderful career. And so it's still a great place. Young comedian, old comedian, middle-aged comedian. It's fun to be there.
Comics Freddie Roman and Jeffrey Ross recorded last year. They're featured in the documentary Let Me In, I Hear Laughter, A Salute to the Friars Club. It's just been released on video. Coming up, Henry Sheehan reviews the Taiwanese film Yi Yi, which was an award winner at the Cannes Film Festival. This is Fresh Air.